I mean, or we just continue the bit where this is already the intro, and then this just becomes a thing we have to pretend we're not doing forever.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this is how I farm out what the cold open is.
Yeah, it's usually just me panicking about not really understanding how to do an intro yet.
And outros, actually.
Oh,
Weirdly enough, the outros are also you panicking.
yeah. The middle also has a bit of it. I think I hide it better. So, one thing about this episode that you don't know is I have changed everything and not informed you until right now. So, like offline, you and I have been kind of going back and forth about how to tackle the beast that is RuneScape. And last time we talked, I was going to do an episode about the Twisted Bow today, and then we were going to maybe do like a gross 4 hour long thing where I just spew words at you about this dumb game until some of it makes sense because it's so big and interconnected. But I feel like that kind of goes against what we were trying to do with this show anyway, which was take a
Okay.
more like ad hoc approach. So we're not talking about the Twisted Bow today because of that, and also because I haven't played the game in 6 months, and I know some things have changed with combat, and I don't want to give out incorrect information. So today we are going to talk about the Grand Exchange and trading in RuneScape.
Oh, nice. Okay. This is good. This is an episode I was hoping we would do at some point because we talked about it so much in the info dumping, and I know that you've mentioned it in the past, and it's been on my mind about this weird economy running in this game.
Yeah. This is going to have like some info dumping vibes to it because I have been. Well, here, let's back up a little bit, I guess, and start with like what kind of is RuneScape a bit, just in case we have people who do not know, which is hopeful. Hopefully, not everyone listening to this knows what RuneScape is. If you do, I'm sorry. Okay, so I guess what did you've I made you play like a couple of days worth in the middle 2000s.
Yeah, I think I could probably forget my password on an account I made in 2008.
Yeah. Let's see, when did this actually first start? So RuneScape is an MMO. It is a fantasy MMO with low poly graphics. Started on FunOrb a long time ago. When did Classic release? I probably should have checked that. I just looked at the new stuff. I play old school RuneScape, which is a confusing thing. Okay, so RuneScape originally came out in 2001. RuneScape Classic did. RuneScape 2 was a couple years after that. I want to say 2004. RuneScape 2 gave a graphical upgrade. Your character and your progress move from 1 to 2. 2 is kind of when it got big. I started in middle school, so I've been playing this game on and off since then.
Jesus.
And I'm in my mid-30s now, so it's been a while.
Yeah. Jeez.
So RuneScape 2 carried me for quite a while. And a lot of people. It got pretty big. It was kind of referred to as like the poor man's WoW for at the time because it did not necessarily require a membership. The other point, I guess, in RuneScape's favor is that at the time, and to a large degree now, it will run on anything. Like, you could get enough potatoes in series to run RuneScape. It was originally an in-browser application, so like you would just go to the library and be able to log in and access your character anywhere without having to install anything.
I was gonna say, when you said that it runs on anything, I didn't think that you actually had to download anything. My recollection was that it was a browser game.
And that lasted as long as it could. There's like some pretty strict technical limitations on a game when you're when you're doing everything in a browser. I mean, like, we are both of the age that we have played a fair amount of browser games. Like, imagine trying to recreate World of Warcraft in that kind of a setting. It's just not.
Yeah, not
feasible. And part that legacy is also like why the code base is the spaghetti nightmare that it is. So RuneScape 2 to RuneScape 3, that is an interesting point. And we'll try to skip through some of this because this might be its own episode at some point. The short version is RuneScape and Jagex, the parent company, were having issues with real-world trading. So people exchanging in-game currency and items for human dollars. It got to the point that like payment processors were going to maybe leave them high and dry, which would, you know, immediately kill the company if they couldn't collect money for payments. So they made some pretty drastic changes to the game. This coincided, this would have been, let's see, 2007? Yeah. So the first big one was they changed how trading works, which we'll cover in a minute here, and they also changed how player versus player combat works. And because of those two, a ton of the player base left. Like, a huge chunk left over a very short period of time. That game continued on forward as RuneScape 3 with a smaller player base, and they continued to make updates to it, and they did a whole graphical overchange. It's a whole other thing.
And it's still running?
It is still running. It is completely branched off from old school RuneScape. It is continuous since Classic. So like the starting areas are still there, but there's all new landmasses and new quests, and the combat system is completely different. There's like an action bar and all kinds of stuff. It is the same MMO carried forward through that whole like 30 years essentially.
Jeez. Okay.
Now old school RuneScape exists because a bunch of people were like, hey, we liked the game, and then you made us not like the game by changing a bunch of things. What if you just undid that and we gave you money again? And they weren't like real keen on it. They eventually did a poll, which hit enough support that they created a very small team to resurrect the server backup from 2007 that they found. I want to say it's like in August or September or something, towards the middle end of the year.
Okay.
So they just like someone found it on a machine somewhere, and it was like, oh, okay, I guess there's technically enough here that we could like restart this thing. So that's what happened, is they restarted in middle of 2007. Your character starts fresh, which was frustrating. So like the character I originally made in middle school is technically within RuneScape 3. That character traveled forward with that game. When I started old school, you're starting back level, like zero XP, starting all over.
Oh, that sucks. Oh, man.
Yeah. In an MMO, that can be kind of a big deal, and especially in RuneScape, which has as gross of a level curve as I have ever seen in a game.
Woof. Okay.
As like a rough indication of the level progression, your skills go from 1 to 99. If we're just looking at the XP total required for each level, the midway point between 0 XP and level 99 is level 92.
Brutal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ouch.
So okay. Starting over was rough for a lot of people. It also means like the community has this really weird contentious relationship with the development team, and the development team, and yeah, it's a whole weird vibe. Well, that'll be maybe an episode itself someday also, where this is like the only game on the planet where I've seen players hold in-game riots to get minor content reverted, and it happens somewhat regularly.
Ugh. And it all started when they capitulated to the gamers in 2007.
Yep. Yep. Well, and now, like, old school RuneScape has a significantly larger player base and no microtransactions, which is not the case with RuneScape 3. RuneScape 3 is as pay to win as you would like it to be now.
Wow. Okay.
And so they resurrected that 2007 server. that game kind of hung on by itself with, I think, one or two people working on it. Like, one or two, like, code people working on it, developers. No art team, nothing. So it was a skeleton crew to, like, get it up and running and keep it from collapsing, essentially.
Okay.
And eventually it got a large enough player base that they were able to devote more humans to that team. And now old school RuneScape is like its own completely different branched off game. So it shares the DNA at 2007 with RuneScape 3, but they've gone different directions since then. Some content is shared back and forth from like an inspiration standpoint, but it's not like a one-to-one replication.
Has old school like kept the graphic style and everything as the 2007 game, or has it also moved forward to 3?
Yes and no.
Okay.
The RuneScape people are screaming at me right now. It's going to depend who you ask on
okay.
how much of a yes you get out of that. Sure. I will say yes. So they have tried to keep the vibe of the aesthetic, if not necessarily the same technical limitations.
Okay.
So there are strictly more polygons now than there used to be, but the vibe is still pretty similar. And if the vibe gets too far off, people throw enough of a fit that it usually gets changed.
Hmm. Okay. Weird. That's a very strange dynamic.
Yeah. And there's so many interesting stories we could tell about like the anytime they try to change anything and people lose their minds. Just collectively lose their minds because this point and click medieval simulator from like the mid 2000s is the only thing we have left that hasn't been completely destroyed by capitalism at this point. It's like just leave the starting area alone. I don't need anything else. Just let me retreat to my 8th grade snow day.
Yeah,
my $12 a month. But today, that's kind of just like a rough overview of how the game existed and how we got here. But today we're specifically going to talk about the economy and trading and kind of how that's evolved. We're going to focus on old school RuneScape. I might throw in a few more like RS2, RS3 facts as we go randomly. But for the most part, we're going to be just looking at old school RuneScape.
Okay.
So when the game started, the only way you could trade was to be face-to-face with another player and pop up a trade interface, and you both offer up your items and hit accept or decline. So you had to be standing next to a person and, like, chat through the keyboard and talk to them and in order to get anything done. It's a giant pain in the ass. It's a giant pain in the ass.
That also feels like a vector for 6th graders to get in some trouble.
Yeah, that might... Lures and scams are absolutely going to be an episode we do, because there are so many people who, like, are virtually immune to, like, MLM pitches and crypto because of how much we lost as, like, 12-year-olds in this game to, like, you know, 14-year-olds in this game who are smarter. Yeah, it is wildly abusable. I mean, like, item swaps are really common, so like maybe you'll put like a rune scimitar up in the trade window and then quick swap it out for a mithril scimitar that's worth a tenth the price because it's a slightly different shade of blue, and then you just kind of hope the other person doesn't notice and keeps clicking accept. Yeah. And then they get very elaborate. Like they get elaborate to the point where there are multiple people involved. Like some person will approach you and pretend to like help you try to scam the scammer, but they're in on it the whole time as well. Like it gets intense. And that's because RuneScape Gold has like a real world equivalent value, and some of those items are worth thousands of dollars. So
oh yes, we will not get into this, but our first original test episode of how we were going to do this show involved, was it Venezuelan gold farmers?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Yes, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So all of these things have a real world corollary, which I think is part of what makes them interesting and sometimes tragic. So you had to trade with someone face to face. There's banknotes, which allow you to turn a physical item into like a piece of paper. So you can carry, you know, 10,000 swords with you in one item slot instead of having to hand someone 10,000 swords, 28 at a time. You can just give them a stack of paper that they go to a bank and turn back into swords. So there's a little bit of quality of life there to facilitate larger trades. But you still had to find a person who was either buying or selling the thing you were looking for.
Which probably just meant that there was a designated place everyone went to and they were spamming the keyboard.
So there's two options. I'm going to show you both here. There were forums, which unfortunately were recently taken down. They were up forever. I went to go find some of my old forum posts today and could not because they're gone, which is sad. But yeah, I used to spend time on the forums, like buying or selling. And then the other one, yeah, like you said, is you would go to a certain place, which I am actually going to drop you a thing in chat here. So, yeah, you would either have to find someone on the forum, or there were kind of designated areas where people would gather. Typically, those would be in banks on a specific server. So you would go to World 2, and you would go to either like Falador Park or Varrock West Bank, and you would see something like this.
Oh my god, which this is inscrutable.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
wow.
Great audio content here. On your screen you've got, I don't know, like 50 people all just screaming into the void, either buying X item at X price or selling Y item at Y price. And this is how I learned to type, was by just over and over typing selling coal 180 each. Maybe you throw your name at the end or not. Maybe like it. The other thing is like just trying to decipher this in the moment. Yeah. And like, even if you see the words you wanted to see in chat, they move so fast that it would be hard to like find the person. And then you would either go to the top level of the bank so you could try to like talk or teleport to somewhere else or run over somewhere else. I'm going to send you one other one here, and this is from Falador. So this, obviously this was a really inefficient system with everyone just screaming into the void. So eventually this started to happen on its own. And what you're looking at now is a map of Falador. And it's kind of a heat map with where people would congregate selling various gear or supplies. So you would know, like, oh, if I am looking for a specific Barrows item, which is like a high-level piece of armor, I'm going to go to the north of Falador Park, and there will be people there trading in Barrows sets.
This is just a map of a farmer's market.
Yes.
This is incredible.
But no one's running it. Like, this is just... This all happened kind of organically. Because it was more efficient to be... This is why when you, like, see a mattress store, there's five other mattress stores right next to it, or same thing with cell phone stores, is because those companies know that, like, well, if we're all kind of next to each other, maybe they'll check all of us and we have a shot at it.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing here. It just gives you a better chance to, like, connect with someone who is looking for you. But this left a lot of... This means, like, the person you are interacting with has to be online and has to be in the same world that you're on also.
Right.
So still very inefficient.
I do really like how Party Hats is outside the gates of the city. It's just north. You do Party Hats elsewhere. You get that shenanigans out of here.
Party Hats could be an episode also, honestly. Those were... So RuneScape has had some discontinued items. So items that were available either during like a holiday event or for some limited time because of an update, something like that, where X number of the items come into the game and then the item is no longer attainable.
Okay.
So now there is suddenly a finite supply of something, which means the price is typically only going to increase.
Sure.
So party hats, like, are at the top of the list of things that are worth an ungodly sum of money now. Like, that is, party hats are kind of like almost what backs GP in a way in RS3. Like, you can peg the economy to the price of party hats to some degree.
Great. Okay. I love that. I wish our economy was based on party hats.
I mean, it's not that different than...
It's just less jaunty.
What we're doing now. Yeah. If anything, the party hats are more stable. So, this was the state of things from the 2007 backup as well. This was before the Grand Exchange existed.
Okay.
Out of this, we're gonna transition to just talking about RS3. Old School RuneScape. The Grand Exchange got added kind of right when they made the trade restrictions that caused everybody to leave RS2. Right towards the end of 2007, early 2008. So just after the server backup. So, when Old School RuneScape became a thing, this was what we all had to deal with, but we weren't, like, you know, nine anymore, so you couldn't stand somewhere and type for 3 hours and
right.
do nothing else. Like, this wasn't in the playbook for most people. So people started immediately clamoring for the Grand Exchange, which is what we're going to talk about in a second here. That kind of automates tradings. But there wasn't... The early Old School community was obviously very guarded with anything being changed, because the last time something changed, we all left for like 7 years and had to start over.
Right. you rebelled.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a whole polling system in place where you go to a voting booth in the game and you cast your ballot on whether or not certain things should happen as updates. And updates need to hit like a 75% threshold before they come into the game.
Is that for like any update, or just like what's the threshold on that?
little up in the air.
Okay.
Early on, that threshold was tight. Like, it was like it changed a damn thing. A, because they didn't have the budget, and B, because everyone was mad all the time. Over time, Jagex has loosened their stance on what is or is not going to be pulled. They started to release what were called integrity changes, of just like, hey, we know you don't want this, but if we don't change this, we're pretty sure the game's going to die. We'll talk about one of those today, when they implemented a tax into the Grand Exchange. That was an integrity change. To try to fight rampant inflation. So people were kind of hit or miss on whether or not the Grand Exchange were going to come in. So they kind of took a half step first, called trading posts. These came in 2014, tail end of 2014. It was essentially a forum post you would make, but it stayed within the game. So you would go to a specific location, and you could make a buy offer or a sell offer, and that would just go to like an in-game's Craigslist ad, essentially.
Okay.
And people could see it from anywhere. Like, you didn't have to be in the same world to see someone's buy or sell offer. You would just see like their name, the item, and whatever price they had set. And then you could add their name to your friends list, and you could private message them and then facilitate the trade on your own that way. So, better than standing in a bank and spamming selling Rune Essence 18 GP each for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
But it still requires you to be online at the time, still requires you to seek out an individual, both to like find the trade you want to make and then actually do the trade itself.
Right, yeah.
So, not ideal either. And eventually we get to the Grand Exchange to solve this problem. And this solution is to just automate the whole thing. I'm going to drop you another picture here. This is where the Grand Exchange is located. It is in the city of Varrock, which is one of the main cities in the game, pretty near to the starting area. And that box in red in the northwest corner is the Grand Exchange.
Okay. Yeah, so that's just a giant, that's like probably what, a third of the size of the city, just in a giant circle.
It is pretty big. Yeah. There's a couple ways to get there. There are a few teleports that take you right there. There is, if you look in the top left corner, there's a little green arrow, and mm-hmm. that's a ditch underneath the castle wall that you can climb under if you have the needed agility level to do so. Performing certain tasks in Varrok will allow you to change your teleport spell, so you can teleport right to the Grand Exchange instead of into the middle of the city like you normally would. So that saves you some time. There's a lot of ways to get there. It is now kind of the hub of the game and the economy, because this is where you go to do all of your trading for the most part. The way it works is, I'm going to give you a thing of the interface here. If you are a member of the game, so if you're a paying player, we've got all of these slots here, 8 slots that you can put either buy or sell offers in. And so maybe you'll put an offer in for, you're going to buy raw sharks at 800 gold pieces each. And if someone else, some on any other server, has a sell offer in for the same value, it'll automatically complete that transaction for you. So you will get your sharks, that person will get their money, you never have to see them, talk to them, you don't know who they are, it all happens instantaneously.
Okay. That seems very convenient.
It is wildly convenient.
Yeah, it's way better than Craigslist posts.
Yeah. And it changes a lot of things. So you need a lot of items in this game if you are playing the game in the standard mode where you are trading with other people. It is not uncommon to need, like, I don't know, 30,000 of a thing. And chopping down 30,000 logs yourself is unfun. It takes a very long time, so buying them is much easier.
I'm just looking at this screen, and there's an item on here that has 7,300 units. That's wild.
Oh, yeah. So those are... Yeah, I didn't even really look at the screenshot too closely. This came from the wiki. Wow, they're buying a lot of those. That's someone who's trying to make a collection, for sure.
There's also a twisted bow in here, as if it's taunting me at the past topic that this was.
Oh, the twisted bow is going to come up here in a second also, because there was a fun bug with the Grand Ball. Not really a bug. Okay, so you can now buy and sell things instantly. That's super cool. It's really fast. But there can be problems that happen with that too. So now we have a fully functioning marketplace and, like, kind of a measurable economy.
Yeah, like, I mean, just the notion of buying and selling with set prices, it just turns into, like, a true commodities market now.
Yes. So there are a number of things that kind of will set prices. Here's another shot. This is kind of the UI of working on one item. So this is showing a sell offer, but you either click an item to sell it, or you type in a field and pick an item that you're trying to buy. You have an option on to set the quantity and to set the price. By default, the game gives you a suggested price that it thinks is, like, roughly the market rate of that item. Jagex has not revealed exactly how the math on that works. It does seem to take some pretty wide averages. Prices can fluctuate a lot minute to minute, but, like, their kind of median price stays pretty consistent. They only update it every week or once or twice a week, depending on the item. And usually it shifts by no more than 5%, I think, is the maximum value per week. In RS3, when this transition first happened in the other game, you couldn't deviate from that median price by very much. In old school RuneScape, you can sell a 2 billion item for 3 GP if you want to. But as it was originally implemented in RS3, you were stuck with whatever the median was for the most part.
That's very strange.
And that was in place to limit the real world trading again, and also now botting becomes a bigger issue. Because now you can set up, you know, a bunch of accounts to chop wood and sell them all at once without having to either do, you know, maybe one big transaction with one other person. You can do a bunch of smaller ones that are maybe harder to detect. And you're not meeting a physical person to be seen either. So there are restrictions in place now on like low level botted items to discourage that behavior. So new accounts can't trade like logs and like really common early game items. New accounts cannot sell them until they have, I think, like 20 hours or so of playtime, which is usually long enough for a bot to get banned.
That's wild. I wouldn't have thought that. Yeah, obviously you would create bot accounts to flood the market with things that generate gold that then can be turned into real world dollars.
There are now flipping bots that just buy and sell items on the Grand Exchange to make money.
Incredible.
So which is what I did. So not the botting part, but the buying and selling items.
You just basically make bots that short sell.
Yeah,
great.
There's also like that. I've done some testing on this. There's some debate on whether a bot dump happens. So there is a theory that heavily botted items like raw materials, like raw fish and potion ingredients and stuff like that. There's a theory that the people running those bot networks tend to sell off all of their stuff when Jagex employees are not in the office, so overnight, typically. If that's the case, that means all of the bots trying to sell all of those items at the same time is going to drop the price down.
Yeah.
So you can make money by buying those items overnight and then selling them in the morning when all of the players get on and try to buy them, which then pushes the price back up. So there's some debate on if that's a function of bots flooding the market, or if that's just related to player counts in general. There are just less people in the off hours relative to the daily ones for this time zone.
I love that. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So like I mean, I've made millions of gold just like flipping raw sharks overnight. You put an offer before you go to bed, you wake up, sometimes it comes through, sometimes it didn't. So yeah, I made the only reason I still play this game at all, honestly, is because I can make all of my money doing this. And it, once they released the mobile app, it became really easy to like kind of have playing the market be its own game, where you just pull your phone out, log in, check your offers for 3 minutes, adjust a few things, and then come back in 2 hours. So what I did was just make a bunch of money in my downtime, so then when I could actually sit at the computer, I could then spend that money and play the game instead of having to do profit-generating tasks that are boring and tedious.
Amazing. So it just turned you into a weird day trader, and then
exactly
you just like, chill out and play the game for fun later.
Yeah. Yep. Some people are real mad about it that anyone makes money doing that. People either don't necessarily, and this happened before the Grand Exchange existed too, even more so, because the prices would swing wildly before there was kind of a central place that everyone could go to get an idea of what a thing cost. You just kind of had to take a temperature of the room. So in the past, prices would shift between like Falador and Varrock could have wildly different prices on the same world at the same time. So you could make money like buying a thing in Falador, teleporting to Varrock, and going over to West Bank and selling it there. So same idea, but now we can just kind of automate the whole thing.
Yeah. So I'm trying to figure out. So you mentioned earlier that the Grand Exchange kind of became this like hub for people playing the game. Like it became like this really important place. Is it like, is that for people who are day trading and like basically they are playing the exchange as a major part of their gameplay? Or is like, because of all of these big economic changes and like development of an actual economic system, has that fundamentally changed how you end up playing OSR?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So one of the downsides to, I don't even know how to quantify this anymore. A difference between the game when I was 12 and now is that things are much more centralized, I guess. So before, you would find players everywhere. And we all played wildly inefficiently because we were dumb kids and we were there to spend time in the game. It wasn't necessarily as goal orientated as we're capable of being as adults. So now you typically see people doing things in only the most or maybe second most efficient way possible. And that means you don't encounter players kind of everywhere. But the Grand Exchange is someplace everybody has to go to get stuff. So it becomes kind of the only reliable place where you know for sure you're going to see other players.
Okay.
But like anytime you buy anything or sell anything, it happens right there. No matter where you got the item from, you're going to go to the Grand Exchange to sell it.
Okay. So it's also there is
one of the closest teleports to a bank that early players get. So it's not uncommon just to see people who will teleport in, use the bank, and then leave.
Okay.
There is a downside to all of this speed and efficiency and transactions is it means people can start messing with stuff.
Like manipulating the market?
Uh-huh.
Oh, great. Okay, cool.
So what happens if, let me find the price history for vodka. This is a good... I wish I had this in my notes already. I should have thought of this before. So there's a couple different things. We're going to talk about all the different things that are going to affect an item's price. The supply and the demand, obviously, are kind of the major ones.
Yep.
But there's a number of things that factor into the supply and the demand. Some items are tradable, where you can freely move them between players. There are a few items that are tradable, but that cannot be traded on the Grand Exchange for some reason. So you have to still trade those few items in person. Those are really interesting. People do a lot of collecting and other like weird manipulation with those. So another thing that can affect the price are changes to the game updates. So this could be either a new item coming out or maybe a new training method that utilizes an item that already exists that utilizes it differently than it would have been used before. It could be a nerf to an item. So a weapon getting less powerful could tank the price or maybe raise the price of something else that's now more powerful. In the case of vodka, I think it was vodka. Doesn't matter. There was a beverage. It was worth like 0 coins because it had no purpose in the game. Suddenly it became a required item in a quest step. When a quest releases, everyone goes to do it at the same time, which means suddenly no one wanted vodka and then everybody needed one, like
yep,
all at once. And there wasn't a good way to get them. So it shot up from like 20 coins to thousands or tens of thousands of coins in a very, very short period of time, like an hour or two.
Jeez. Okay.
So if you can predict those things, you could make a lot of money. to kind of avoid some of that, they started to put some limitations in place. So they added in buy limits on most items. So this is a running 4 hour total, where in that 4 hour period, you were only allowed to buy X number of that item. And if you try to buy more, the Grand Exchange just won't complete the transaction. So for like your more rare combat items, like higher level gear, armor, weapons, rings, that kind of thing, usually it's 4 or 8 that you can purchase in a 4 hour period. Supplies like potions, I want to say the buy limits are usually 2,000. Runes for casting spells are much higher. Arrows are much higher. Those are in like the 10 to 30,000 range, depending on the item. And the idea is that's going to hopefully keep someone who has a lot of money from doing a solo Ponzi scheme.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't really understand why you would put limits on that stuff, but yeah, okay, I see.
Yeah. So if you take an item that has like a pretty low daily volume, you could potentially buy all of them, especially the rares that are the ones that have like a limit of 4 or 8. Some of those only trade, you know, a couple a day, which means one person could theoretically just keep buying them and driving the price up.
And then flipping them. Yeah. Huh. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when you buy the first one, it starts a 4 hour timer. And then that just resets every 4 hours from there.
Okay. So is when you initiate, or I guess when you put in a sell offer, like I have 10,000 pieces of wood that I would like to sell off.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that wood go? Like, is that now in the exchange, or do I hold on to that until this? Okay.
You put it essentially in a box in the exchange. The same thing happens for money when you go to make a buy offer. So if you go to, they've changed this recently where it can draw money directly out of your bank, which I hate. But in the past, you used to have to like have 10,000 coins and essentially hand that 10,000 coins to an NPC. And those would sit in a box. And if the transaction goes through, the next time you go in the box, it's the wood that you bought instead of the coins, or vice versa.
Okay. Jeez. Okay. All right.
So that means, and this is where like a lot of the profit that I made came from, is people not wanting to wait for that process. So if you look at the interface screenshot I sent you with the Zamorakian spear, you have your quantity, your price per item, and there's a couple buttons beneath that. There's a hand with some gold coins. If you click that, it just sets it to the median price. And then there's an up arrow and a down arrow. Those adjust it by 5%. So typically what will happen is like people will get a drop like this Zamorakian spear, which is a really cool spear. It's got a bunch of uses that are like really specific, which is why it's pretty expensive. It has niche uses and it comes from a very hard to kill demon. And it's a pretty rare drop. So it holds its value pretty well. But when people get a Zamorakian spear drop, they're like, man, I don't want this spear at all. I already have one of these. But what I do want is that 15 million gold real bad, so I can turn that into prayer XP or buy some ring to increase my strength a little further. But people are antsy, so they'll typically click that minus 5% button a few times and then just immediately sell it. And what'll happen is it'll typically sell to someone who has a low buy offer in and has been waiting for a while, and maybe it'll sell like roughly 5% or so below market, typically. So when you're flipping items, the idea is you want to be the person who is sitting there waiting for someone who got the drop and wants to unload it right away. And then you also want to be the person who is waiting for someone who just died and lost their spear and really needs another one. And that person's going to come and click the up arrow a bunch of times and pay a little bit extra because they're also trading their time for GV.
All right. So you were, as the saying says, buying low, selling high.
Yeah, I was providing market liquidity. You want to be a real nozzle about it. Because otherwise you'd either have to wait or those price swings would be significantly higher, I guess, is the other thing that could happen. One other thing that really affects the potential price of an item is the high elk value, which I think we've touched on once or twice. So high alchemy, high level alchemy is a spell you can cast. You need level 55 magic, gives you 65 magic experience per cast, costs about a, wow, that's gone down. 100 GP in runes? Huh, okay. It's like nature runes have dropped in price in the last 6 months since I've played this. That makes sense. So it costs about 100 gold or so to cast the spell, and it turns an item directly into gold pieces.
And is that the high alc value, is that related to the median grand exchange price?
No. Okay. And that is why it is provides a floor for items. So okay. Here's another screenshot. This is a couple different items that I've just kind of stacked up their information next to each other. We're going to look in that center box that says values. So a rune plate body is kind of low to mid-level gear. It's a pretty common drop from monsters. It's basically coins. If you look, all of these items have a value number. The value is a hard-coded amount set by the developer. So in the case of the rune plate body, they've decided that that thing is worth 65,000 coins. That's the price that you would see that item for sale in a NPC-owned shop.
Okay.
So the high elk value is a percentage of that. I think it's like 55 or 60%. I don't remember off the top of my head. High elk value is a percentage off of the value that the developer sets. But the price in the exchange can be anything. It could be even less than the high alchemy value, although that is not likely for a reason we're about to see. If you look, the exchange price right now says it's about 38,000 coins, and the high alchemy value is 39,000 coins. So that means right now you could theoretically go buy this rune plate body for 38,200 coins, spend about 100 coins in runes, and turn it into 39,000 gold. So you just made 700, just like that. And you got some magic XP for doing it. So that keeps common items from, like, tanking down to zero.
That makes sense. Okay.
Because if you have way too many rune plate bodies, you can turn them into coins, and those coins can be used to purchase anything else. So the lowest the rune plate body can really drop is a little bit below its high elk price, because eventually there's just enough bots that will buy it and turn it into coins, and you don't even need players anymore. But if we look at something like the next one over is Dragon Claws. This is a very rare item. You'll see it. The value Jagex gave it is about 205,000 coins, so it's high elk's 123,000. But on the exchange, it trades for 102 million because it's very rare and very useful. So that is a thing that you would not want to cast high alchemy on.
And I'm assuming the value that you can purchase it in the game, like that there's a finite amount of those items available for any amount of time.
Typically, yes. Or sometimes in the case of the Dragon Claws, it's not available in a shop at all. So okay. It still has a value coded into it for the purposes of figuring out the high alchemy and the low alchemy. I believe the value used to be, I think, the starting price in the exchange when they first would add the item, although they have changed that policy since. So like when these I'm pretty sure like when these claws came out that they would start the median price in the exchange would have been 205k. Even though when they first came out, they were probably trading for like 400 million each or something.
Jeez.
And okay. That median price used to only shift by 5% a day, which meant for new items, it would be wildly off.
Take a while.
Yeah, for that to even out. So now they've changed things where they adjust that price either manually or just more frequently. They'll update it. So it's a little bit more accurate. Typically, items don't swing too hard unless there's a big update of some kind.
Okay.
And then the last one you'll see there is cooked sharks. Those are a common food. So those ones are only worth, what, 900? Wow, those went back up. Huh. sharks crashed right when I stopped playing like 6 months ago. If you look at the little graph in the corner,
episode
there,
title.
You can see it. There you go.
Sharks crashed.
Yeah, you can see the little graph in the corner there that they're on a pretty good uptrend. So yeah, those are worth like 900 coins and the high elk for like 200. So you don't want to do that either. But if you look at the buy limit and the daily volume, considerably different than what we see with the plate body or the claws.
Right.
So the claws
10,000. Yeah. And that's in that 4 hour window.
Correct.
The buy limit.
Yeah. So you could buy 70 rune plate bodies in 4 hours, 8 dragon claws, or 10,000 sharks.
Okay.
So that means like when you're flipping items, the buy limit's a really big deal. The claws, I have flipped claws. You'd probably find like anywhere from like a 50k to maybe a 1 mil, maybe a 2 mil margin if you're careful and lucky. Which means you want to be like really selective with your buy and your sell price. And if you look, there's only, 2,000 of those moving throughout the entire game at any given day, roughly. And there's 100,000 people on at any point also. So there's not, relative to the player count, there's not a lot of those moving in a day compared to something like the sharks there, which are selling 8.6 million sharks.
Constantly.
Yeah. And with a buy limit of 10,000, that means if you can get a margin of like, just 5 or 6 gold pieces, that's 50k you just made by flipping the full amount.
Right.
So it wouldn't be uncommon for me to like be buying sharks and selling sharks at the same time with like 5 gold in between those two prices, and you just make a free 50k over a few minutes as that process happens. Okay. So this goes on for a while. As we saw with the high alchemy example, what happens with these items is they're frequently turned into just gold, and monsters also drop gold. And it's all digital, so the gold doesn't wear out like a dollar bill does. Which means,
yeah, and there's infinite amount of gold available.
Yeah, there's just more gold constantly. And there's not like there's a couple gold sinks. We're going to talk about one that was just implemented, but at the time there was like very few ways to get just raw GP out of the system. I think the most effective one at the time was honestly them banning bot accounts that had a lot of gold on them, or banning real world trading accounts that had a lot of gold on them at the time. That's how most of the gold left the system for a long time, because there really wasn't another way to get 50 million gold out in a chunk.
That makes sense.
Occasionally they did like charity events where players could just chuck gold into a fucking pit, and then Jagex donated X dollars per however many gold pieces to some charity. That was pretty neat.
Yeah. It feels very funny for a game that probably very recently was having some real struggles with payment processors because their game was turning game dollars into real dollars, to then just do that themselves, but
in the inverse, yeah.
and set the price.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fun.
So eventually we start to have like some pretty rampant, inflation problems, as you might expect with all of this currency coming in, not a lot of currency going out. Things got weird. It also made the economy really rough for new players. As inflation continued to go, like things like that kind of mid to upper tier level gear that sat in like not an easy to reach spot for a newish player, but like an attainable place, suddenly those items started to become wildly unattainable. I mean, like looking at these, so we're the dragon claws we looked at, those are 102 million. Like it's a mid-level player probably isn't making even 1 million gold an hour at doing their best moneymaker. So looking at something like those claws, if you're a mid-level player, that's maybe 150 hours of whatever your moneymaker is to pay for just those claws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And so does it basically turn in like, So you have accounts that take things. Let's use the claws as an example, yeah. I guess. So there's this item, Dragon Claws.
Yep.
And me as a mid-level player, I might need one of them to like progress in a quest or like gain a skill or something. But because they are so rare, they become a commodity more than like a quest item. And then this group of people who have been playing the game for a long time, have been playing the market, they now just kind of use those as trade goods for larger exchanges, which then pushes them out of the market for like those mid to low tier players who are just trying to play through the game, right?
Depending on the item, yes. The claws in specific are a spec weapon. They're a special weapon that allow you to attack very quickly for a short period of time. I'm trying to think of how to explain this without having to like give you a 4-hour episode still. Think of RuneScape less like an MMO and more like a satisfactory Astroneer tech tree nightmare.
Okay.
Like, this entire game, the way we play it as adults, is about maximizing efficiency.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be that, and it maybe shouldn't be that, but that's where it ends up for a lot of people. Okay. So the Dragon Claws, you can dump your spec bar into those Dragon Claws, and they let you hit a guy 4 times when you could normally only hit him once. So if you're killing a boss or another player, it's a really good way to get a lot of damage in very quickly. And sure, that means you can do that higher level content a little bit faster, which means now you're getting more rolls on that rare on a drop table per hour, which means you're more likely to get Dragon Claws or some other 100 million gold item as a drop. But as the currency continues to inflate and those things become more expensive, only the high end like activities kind of kept pace. So your end game raids that drop these Dragon Claws, those still made a decent amount of gold per hour. But like your mid tier stuff that someone in like maybe their 60s or 70s levels are doing, those all kind of stayed static in the amount of money they were generating while all of these prices continued to go up. So,
gotcha.
A pretty common loop, and we'll talk about this in like the Twisted Bow or maybe some other high level item episode. But a not uncommon thing that players would do, people would like sell everything in their entire bank to buy a Twisted Bow and then try to rebuild their bank because now they have a Twisted Bow and that thing slaps really hard. So now I can go kill the big dragon even faster than I could kill the big dragon before. So you'd get in this loop where you're like, I'm going to kill the dragon, I'm going to kill Vorkaf with like this mid-tier gear and sell all the loot. And then eventually I'll be able to buy something a little bit better and kill the dragon a little bit faster. And now I'm generating more gold per hour, so I can then buy better gear to go do harder challenges, which give you even more gold per hour. And you're just kind of on this never-ending treadmill.
But as the inflation gets worse, that becomes much more difficult to do,
and,
right?
Yeah, and then that, as inflation got worse, that treadmill kind of meant like, if you don't already have 50 million or 100 million gold, you are at a wild disadvantage.
Sure.
In that treadmill, it became like we did a capitalism real hard, and
right,
and the people who were already ahead continued to get more ahead. When I started flipping, I thought I was scared because I didn't like losing money, because losing money is the same as losing time in this game, essentially. So I set aside, like, I don't know, I think it was 50K or 100K, which isn't a lot. I had maybe a 10 million bank at the time or something. So it was like one couple of percentage points of my wealth at the time. But now I think I broke a billion when I was playing last from that 100K. So like I can flip these Dragon Claws with the amount of money I have, but and make a ton of money doing it with very little work because I have that upfront capital. So I was making anywhere from like 500K to 4 mil an hour as a pretty low level player, where if I was doing in-game activities that were level appropriate, I'd probably would have been making like 200,000 instead of a million an hour.
I guess it is like going back to the notion that they did all of this work to make a much more functional economic system, but it just seems it's very much not the way that I interact with games at all, to like basically use it as an economic simulator and like not participate in the like scripted part of the game.
Yeah, and that became a problem for a lot of people, and still is, because you kind of end up in this space where you're like, well, if I'm not doing the thing that generates the most gold per hour, I'm wasting time.
Right. Which yeah.
ends up making the game not fun if you can't manage that impulse.
Right.
Some people love it. Some people do just enjoy like that part of the loop. I don't want to like shame that specifically, but I have heard a lot of people get into a place where like that can take the fun away from the game because you're just trying to maximize GP per hour, however that is. Because like, boy, if you need 100 million gold to like, I don't know, hit level 85 crafting or something, and your fun method makes 250K an hour and your unfun method makes 1.3 mil an hour, you can immediately do the math and be like, well, if I have fun, this is going to take me 60 hours instead of 12. And that.
Yeah. And how fun is it going to stay for 60 hours?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So because of that kind of stuff, we see a whole new game mode emerges. A couple people started this. I think Bodhi was maybe the streamer who got big doing it first. So you end up in this treadmill forever, and eventually people want to get off, like you were saying. And we see people who started to play the game where they don't interact with other players. And they arbitrarily restrict themselves to not trading with anybody ever, which means when you need to burn 30,000 maple logs to gain a couple of fire making levels, you got to go chop down those logs yourself or get them as a drop instead of just walking over to the Grand Exchange and buying them in 3 seconds.
That also sounds like hell.
Yeah, that's a different hell that I don't want to be involved in. but so that is the Iron Man mode. The Iron Man stands alone. That is the Iron Man game mode where you are not allowed to trade with other people. A lot of people started like second accounts to do this. This is something that happens when you have played the game for, you know, 20 years and you've wringed every level of enjoyment out of it and you start over and make it weirder and harder. And people have been finding different ways to do that with RuneScape forever now. So to deal with this inflation, they institute a tax. So now what happens is 1% of the price that an item sells for disappears from the transaction and goes to a mysterious bucket behind the curtain.
And that currency is just gone from the game.
There's two things they did with it. So they this all came about because they like hired a few economists to look at everything that was happening and try to make it suck less. And I think this was a decent solution that they came up with. So the 1% tax hits anything over 100 GP, is it maybe? They exempt really inexpensive items, and then there's a special list of like early game tools and quest items and things like that that are also exempted. So the goal was to not like really impact the new player experience too heavily with this tax. So 1% of an item goes away. You'll see that on that same Zamorakian spear screenshot. You can see they're selling the item at 15,203,000. But they're only going to get 15,050,000, so about 150K, so 1%, disappears into the tax bucket.
I do like how it's called a convenience fee.
Yeah, yeah. Some percentage of that tax money goes into like a behind-the-curtain wallet and will occasionally purchase an item on the exchange itself. So there is a list of items that they try to keep stable-ish from a price standpoint. So let's look at that spear again. So what'll happen is we'll pretend the economy exists exclusively based on Zamorakian spears for the purpose of this discussion.
Yep.
So that behind the curtain tax wallet, once that thing has like, I don't know, we'll say 16 or so million in it, it goes onto the Grand Exchange and it buys a spear itself and then it deletes the spear. So,
oh, okay.
So we take money away out of the system to start with. And then we take that money that's out of the system and we buy an item and then delete that item to get the item out of the game.
That makes sense. Because ultimately what would happen is that the more people get those spears, the price on the spears would crash. And then now you have like end game items that are just barely worth their high elk value that you could buy for percentage of what the actual exchange price is.
Exactly.
Okay.
And like this spear is kind of like a mid to mid upper level drop. It comes from the God Wars dungeon, which back in the middle school days was like literally end game content. And now it's like, I don't know, are you like level 70? Yeah, go there then. It's much, much easier now with modern gear. But kind of like you were saying, eventually that Zamorakian spear, if they aren't leaving the game, I don't need two of them. There's only so many people who need a spear, and people will sit there and farm that boss all day. So like you said, eventually that price goes down and the spear becomes useless, which means that mid-level moneymaker is now no longer useful either.
Right.
So that's kind of the idea with the item deletion, is to keep some of those moneymakers relevant.
Does that have implications on like people's play style of the game too? Like if we're talking about like this spear kind of basically bottoming out,
mm-hmm.
You don't have, like, do you have less people running that dungeon and less people interacting with the content of the game? Because, you know, it's just much easier to buy the damn thing than it is to actually go through the time it takes to beat the dungeon.
Yeah. So like, as with other things in this game, it's complicated. That's why I'm still playing it. But at some point, it becomes either not worth the time or not worth the supplies to do that content if the reward value drops far enough.
Sure.
So either you see the players who are doing it will change, or there will just be less players, or maybe something starts getting botted that wasn't before, or bots switch to something else. But like eventually the spear, now that we're deleting items, like if the spear dropped to the point that people didn't want to go kill the Zamorak demon to get it anymore because the gold per hour dropped, that means the gold per hour or something else probably went up a little bit. So maybe Vorkath is a little bit more profitable now because people switched off of Vorkath to go kill this demon. Now the demon's not good anymore, so now we're going to go back to Vorkath. It's not quite that smooth because some bosses have, you know, different requirements to get into them or different skill requirements to do them efficiently, so you can't always move directly from one to another. But there definitely is sort of a leveling that'll happen with like your GP per hour tasks, that if something drops, it usually those players will go somewhere else. The other fix that they've come up with is using some of those mid game items as upgrades for end game gear.
Oh, that makes sense.
So you get a thing to attach to the spear to make a new thing that's even stronger, and it consumes the spear in the process. Or maybe you can take them apart later, either way. But now suddenly I need two spears because I need a spear for to be the spear, but I also need the spear to turn it into a one-handed hosta so I can go kill this other specific boss where I need a shield at the same time.
You take them off the market because they have to continue to be funneled into the market.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not like a world where they're just like, okay, well, we're all done with these Zamorakian spears now. Like, we're no more drops. You don't get any more. Because then that has the opposite effect.
Correct. And like one of the issues is there's not a lot of ways items leave the game. Way back when, the death was pretty punishing in this game. If you died, your shit just dropped on the ground. And you respawn back in the starting zone. And a clock is ticking. And after a few minutes, your shit is now visible to everyone else in the area and they can just pick it up. And a few minutes after that, it just despawns. If you were in an instanced area, like not in the overworld, if you were in like a cave that renders just for you because it's like a quest boss fight or something, and you die in there, your shit was just gone because it hit the ground. Then you died, you get teleported out of that instance. Now there's no longer a player in the instance, so the game closes it and your shit's just gone.
Disappears.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So that's how the game worked forever, which made death terrifying. It also made like going places as a kid terrifying because navigating was hard and you didn't have a lot of teleports. So if you died somewhere and you didn't know where you were or you didn't have a fast enough teleport, there were places you could die that you just physically couldn't walk back to in time.
Yikes.
They've changed all of that because it was too hard and people didn't like it.
It's not fun.
Yeah, it was fine. It's fine when you're talking about rune plate bodies. If you lost your 40k item, you can go get another rune plate body pretty quick. It sucks, but whatever. But if you lose your 102 mil dragon claws because you got disconnected while you were in an instance and timed out, and the boss killed you while you were timed out, and then your shit hit the ground, and then it got deleted because your internet cut out, and you just lost the equivalent of 300 hours of game time because your router hiccuped.
Yikes.
Yeah. So, like, there were, like, good reasons to have that system be changed.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
That also meant, like, sometimes, like, way back when you'd see a guy die, and then everyone would just stand around the place like vultures waiting for their stuff to show up. And then they would like come up 2 minutes later and they'd be like, hey, where'd my stuff go? And everyone would play stupid and be like, I don't know. No one ever saw it, never showed up.
Weird.
So they've changed all of that now. So all of those items go to death, like full on Grim Reaper style death is in the game. It's very cool. He has a couple underground places that you can access, and you have a whole separate wallet system with death, and you give death gold to get your items back. And kind of tied to the high alchemy value, another option to get rid of items instead of alking them is to give them to death, and you get a little bit over the high alk value in death's coffer, in your wallet, specifically to buy items back. So that's another way that they get items and gold out of the game now. But that means, like, those dragon claws don't disappear ever. Like, it's almost impossible to lose an item. There are a series of events that have to happen now for you to permanently lose something.
Yeah, and it sounds like it is a willful choice for the most part.
Yeah, it's either, you're either intentionally being risky with something or pretend, there's a lot of spaghetti code still laying around too, so I don't want to get into like all of the everything in this game has an asterisk.
Yes, I mean sometimes the game just gobbles them up.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, yeah. yeah. There's a whole social side with like merchanting clans and lures and drop parties and various scams, and maybe we'll.
I am just a little bit surprised that there are still scams that occur when you have an entire giant automated system to deal with this.
That just means the scams have to get good. They've switched. Yeah. So the scams then switch from like just fooling someone with interfaces to like full on social engineering, like EVE Online it's just levels of social engineering.
Yikes. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll do it. We'll do an episode about scams, lures, and then like the way people abuse mechanics in the dueling arena, because those are a different type of scam. And all of that really ties into the economy as well. But I don't want to have your brain slip out your ear because I have thrown too many nonsense words at you at once.
I'm just kind of amazed that this... I mean, I haven't really interacted with any MMOs, really. And I know that for... not an MMO specifically, but I remember there was a whole kerfuffle with the auction house, I think, in Diablo 3.
Yep.
And it just is very surprising to me that there are like fully functional economies that are, I mean, it makes sense for something that's been going for almost 30 years now, but it still seems crazy to me that there's just a damn economy in there. Like this is a clear case study of economics at work, and like you can map this directly onto weird capitalism bullshit we deal with every day.
Oh yeah, I mean, I just sent you a link to a website that I used to use for price checking before. Maybe we'll do a whole flipping. Maybe I'll do like a flipping guide on YouTube or something. Because there's a lot. We could spend a whole hour just talking about like the various ways you could make money flipping and how they're all wild. Jeez. But the thing I just sent you is a website that used to track these things remotely through a client. And these are pricing index that this site tracks to like try to quantify and monitor the index, or sorry, the economy.
To the fifth decimal point.
Yeah. And if you look at like the bot farm index, if you see that one usually swings pretty hard. You can see these really like pretty consistent peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
Although we are trending down. So that's a pretty good indication that our bot detection's gotten better. Those peaks, I am almost positive, correlate with Twitch Prime promotions that give out 2 weeks of free membership. And people use that to make members bots for free. And then you'll see heavily botted items will crater in price during that promotion time and then go back up.
Amazing. Yeah, this is like I'm just looking at the wall of the New York Stock Exchange at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I have. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, wow. I have data that I have generated around these. And like you have to get super secret with your item. Yeah, we'll do a whole flipping episode probably, because I think it's very interesting, and there's a lot of weird social mechanics that come into play about like, for a long time I had two different clients running, because I was doing trades. I would do my trades on my phone through the mobile client, because these third-party utilities were tied into a popular third-party client that everyone uses called RuneLite. And so this website would populate data by scraping player data from RuneLite. So if you made trades not using that client, it wouldn't populate into these sites. So like there was a period of time where, depending on what I was doing, I could manipulate the price that would show up on this website by doing trades either on my phone or through RuneLite, so they would show up, depending on which way I wanted to shift the numbers.
That's amazing. What a beautiful, awful thing.
So like I would buy them through RuneLite and get the buy price to track, and then I would sell them on my phone, so my sale price would remain unknown. So someone else looking at this website wouldn't see what I was selling the item for.
Huh.
And then, because they would then undercut me, is typically what would happen.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, this is nuts. So I guess maybe like, It seems like this has been well received. Did it just show up in the game one day? Like there's this giant square of the map and it's just like, okay, here you go. Here's your stock exchange. Go for it, guys.
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
Yep. So back in like the RS2 days, there were no polls. There were no dev blogs. You would log in and there would be three new quests and like a skill that didn't exist last Tuesday.
Wow.
And now everything is hashed out between the website and Reddit to like the third decimal point before anything makes it into the game, before it gets voted on to then maybe make it into the game.
I guess that makes sense, but it's very odd to see how like outside systems and the way that we do things as human beings is just like immediately reflected into this from the standpoint of like economics and like commodity markets, and then even like bringing it back to like, well, we vote on things now. Like there's weird like democracy within the launching of code for a game that also can impact the economics of that game.
Yeah. And then we riot when it goes bad. Everyone grabs their pink skirts and their dwarven cannons and heads to Falador West Park and drops their cannons, turns on the redemption prayer, walk around in a circle and bitch for an hour.
I love that. Yeah. That sounds incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. This is why I'm still playing this game. Honestly, is like the game is definitely has its fun and has its moments, but the weird sociology around it is also super fun to witness and interact with.
Yeah. And how just like, I mean, what you just said about the dwarven cannons and the pink skirts and stuff, like that, along with the farmer's market map of how you were doing trades, like, I don't know, like, I never really think about, I think about MMOs as games that have, that are like WoW and stuff, that have like heavy amounts of lore in them and like, do you know who Arthas is or whatever, but like, so often you hear about people who make friends and like weddings and events and stuff in these games, but I don't really interact with them enough to see how, to see how like economic systems are built and like what weird trends enter the lore of these games simply by people playing them. Like it's never like with the games that I play, it's never like I cannot reflect myself and my worldview onto the game to like change what Fallout is. But here, like, it is very much possible that, you know, you complain enough and they'll roll it back to the servers and then make a weird in-game way for you to buy and sell 10,000 logs at a time. And that's just so weird and beautiful that, like, people can influence the lore of a thing and say, like, here's a stock exchange. We had to make a reason for this to exist and now you have it.
Yeah. And I'll even go one step further with it. And there are things in game that are references to out of game community events that you wouldn't necessarily know otherwise. So like one of the pubs in, I think it's in the Ferox Enclave. Yeah, we could do an episode on the Ferox Enclave, actually. The pub in the Ferox Enclave is called the Old Knight, O-L-D-N-I-T-E. Who was a community member, like back when we were in middle school playing this game, that was someone who was in like their early 20s, I think. They were a little bit older, and they were always like in the top five on the leaderboards, and the RuneScape high scores has this, like, pin in that one too. I could give you like five or six names off the RuneScape high scores from 2007 by memory, just because we all talked about Zezima at the time, because like seeing someone who had level 90 things or was like nearly maxing was insane when you were 12, and like getting to level 30 was the most arduous task of your life. So those people kind of got like burned into our psyche as a child, and the Old Knight was always towards the top and was like known for helping other players and being a positive community experience. And they unfortunately died pretty young. But because of their community involvement, the devs named a pub after them in the game. And there's like a number of things like that where a real world player thing that happens out of the community then gets a reference tied back into the game itself.
That's cool. Yeah, I love that stuff. That's so nice.
So yeah, there's our Grand Exchange primer, I guess. I'm sure I skipped like half of what I wrote down, but that's fine.
That's okay.
Cue outro music, I think.